yeah, the orgasms on demand is definitely something a lot of people ask a lot of questions about. Are they real? Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, they're very real.
Warning, adult content. The Hookup, love and f***ing on Triple J.
You want to know how it works?
You just dangle a pocket watch in front of people's faces, is that it?
You watch a lot of TV.
If you've seen the film Get Out, the idea of this podcast might freak you out a bit, but don't believe everything you see in the movies. I'm Nat Tenchich, and on the podcast, we're talking about erotic hypnosis. You'll find out what you could get your partner to do under hypnosis, if touchless orgasms are a thing, and where consent comes into this whole hypnotic equation. We're joined by Elizabeth, who likes being hypnotized, and Daniel the Wordsmith, a master erotic hypnotist who teaches and uses hypnosis to create intimacy and connection. I started by asking Daniel what hypnosis is.
Well, hypnosis has a couple of different definitions. A more functional definition would be any state where you are over-focused on one stimulus to the exclusion of other stimuli.
Mm-hmm.
So think about the last time that you went to see a really good movie and you were emotionally engaged in the film. And time just kind of slipped away and eventually it ended and you realized it was 3 or 4 hours, perhaps, since you'd last thought about how long it had been. You were in a state of trance. If you've ever driven to work in the morning and just kind of, you know, tapped your fingers on the steering wheel, not really thought about the directions that you're traveling, you know, even though you're controlling a lethal piece of metal, traveling at, well, very fast speeds, you're basically in a kind of trance. You're just running on autopilot. So people go in into and out of trances all the time during the day. When you're listening to music, when you're studying, trance is a learning state as well. So anytime you've ever learned anything brand new or you're learning anything for the first time, when you feel it really soak in, that's when you're getting it on a deeper level. And that's oftentimes accompanied by a trance state.
Mm. And that, like, altering your state of consciousness, like, that'll change how you perceive time and,
yeah, absolutely,
and the world, right?
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of different things you can create effect-wise with trance. We call them hypnotic phenomena. So time distortion is a typical signifier of trance. So the deeper the state of trance, the people can lose time, they can add time. It's very common for people to come out of trance and feel like it's been only a few minutes or no time at all, but it's actually been like an hour or a day. Any effect that can be created by the mind can be harnessed and strengthened and utilized using hypnosis.
So how do you hypnotize people? What's the process? Do you swing a pocket watch?
Well, the pocket watch is really just a ritual. You know, that's the old way of doing things. The new way of doing things takes power away from props and toys, although they can be a lot of fun, particularly for erotic hypnosis. But the work that I do is very much more about empowering my subjects. So we take the power away from the props and we give it to the subject. And so it becomes this consensual journey of exploration of the inner depths of a subject's mind. And it's more about uncovering desire and harnessing fantasy than it is about swinging a pocket watch or, you know, staring deeply into my eyes. Although, personally, I think that's really erotic, too. I think strong eye contact with someone is really hot. But, yeah, I mean, it works as well on a hypnotic level because it's a natural focus. You ever notice when you're looking into someone's eyes for a little while, and I actually teach this exercise in all of my classes, if you look deeply into someone's eyes for a few seconds and you really hold that gaze, you notice that the rest of the world just kind of fades away. Well, you're kind of gently entering a trance state. It works even better if you turn the lights down low or you light a few candles. Staring into a fire is another fantastic gateway into trance. There's lots of different gateways into trance. And all we do with erotic hypnosis is we find some of those gateways and we travel through them with a partner and explore what's on the other side.
Mm. Elizabeth, what's the experience like of being hypnotized for you?
Well, it's an incredibly amazing feeling. I absolutely love being hypnotized. My favorite way to describe it would kind of be like having a really top quality nap, except you come out of that nap and you've just had the most incredible dreams you've ever had because they were real within your mind. and every single muscle in your body has completely relaxed. So you come out of it feeling like you can do anything. You're ready to take on the world. You're motivated. You're energetic. You're just so much better.
So Daniel, how does hypnosis, like, how do you make it erotic? How do you make it sexy?
It erotic? Look, hypnosis is a state, but it's also a big collection of tools. We have a lot of those tools from nature. We have a lot of them from evolution. We've evolved to respond to loud, commanding tones of voice because it usually indicates danger or something really important we have to pay attention to. So it starts with intent. You use a standard framework, which is just the structure of a standard hypnosis session. So you talk about consent first up. You discuss boundaries, limitations, expectations, what it is you like to experience, what it is you're willing to provide, what it is you're willing to give, receive. You formulate an agreement based on those concepts, and then you both enter into the session under those agreements. So consent is baked into every hypnosis session. It's a very important part of deepening the trance, because to go into hypnosis requires a level of trust. And going into trance with a subject or a hypnotist, you know, it requires a great deal of connection as well. It's fantastic for building connection, but you have to at least have some kind of trust to begin with. How you make it sexy? Find out what turns people on. There's a lot of things that people like. So there's a whole fetish around hypnosis called hypnofetishism. And it's people that really are turned on by swinging pocket watches and spiral GIFs online and and all the things that you would associate with traditional erotic hypnosis. You know, the mesmeric gaze, maybe being physically restrained while hypnotized or being tied up while hypnotized. But, you know, for a lot of people, it's about combining hypnosis with something that they already find pleasurable. So fantasy, physicality, sensuality. I teach and coach people that practice tantra, mindfulness, conscious domination and submission, and they combine all of these things with hypnosis. You don't have to. I mean, it's very easy to just combine great sex with hypnosis and make it fantastic sex. So you start with an intent. You want to create something with a partner. You build a framework around it. You have a plan. You talk about the plan. And this kind of touches a bit on consent. And I'm really glad you brought that up as well, because it's a very common question that I get asked is, you know, how does consent work into this? It's really, really simple. When you're dealing with hypnosis and consent, you make a plan. You explain the plan. You understand. You ensure that they understand what the plan is. That's the informed part of informed consent.
Mm-hmm.
And then you do not deviate from the plan. If something fun comes up and you want to talk about it later on, or you want to play with it in your next session, just make a note and play with it in your next session. But trust is one of those things that when you build it, it's beautiful. And when you destroy it, it's broken forever. So you make a plan. You work through the plan, you explain what's going to happen, you set expectations, you communicate what's likely to happen. You talk about things that might be triggering for them. So some of the imagery that's commonly used is stuff that's pretty safe, but I've had people in the past talk to me about how they have a fear of elevators or escalators, or they're just not a fear, just a dislike. And so it's really simple. You ask them what it is they'd like instead. You can use anything as a deepener. Mm. You swap in and out visualizations or imagery depending on preferences of your client. You really make it about your subject. I actually wrote a really long article, which I published on my website just recently, about hypnosis and consent, because I was getting so many questions about it. And it lays out a framework and how to deal with all of that. So, but yeah, you just make a plan. You stick to it. And if something comes up that you want to play with next time, you notice that your subject is really responsive to sensation or pleasure or the idea, not the reality, but the idea of being tied up or restrained while they're hypnotized. You just make a note of that and you bring it up with them in your debrief.
Mm.
You talk about it after the session and then you add it into the next session and you go through and you explain the plan and what it is that you have set up, and so that everyone's always on the same page.
I think you're listening to The Hookup on Triple J, by the way. I'm Nat Tenchich. I'm here with Daniel the Wordsmith, a master erotic hypnotist, and Elizabeth, one of his subjects. But I think one of the pop cultural misconceptions about hypnotism, I guess, is that, you know, you be a chicken once and then someone will click their fingers and you'll just turn into a chicken at any time and it'll like embed something deep in you and make you do things that you don't want to do. is it possible for a hypnotist to make their subject do things they don't want to do?
That's a really complex question. The example that normally causes questions like that is the one that you mentioned, the idea of stage hypnotists and people clucking like a chicken and then saying that they didn't really want to do that and, you know, they were forced to. But the thing that you have to remember about, and I'm not saying those people aren't telling the truth, I'm saying that the people that go up on stage for a hypnosis stage show, they all self-select. That's the one commonality they all have, is every single person that goes up there volunteers. And they know what's involved. They've seen other stage shows. Anyone can get out of that chair and leave at any time. There's never any kind of coercion. So what you have are people that enjoy being exhibitionistic and use that as a kind of framework to allow them to indulge that desire. You know, the hypnotist made me do it. The bad man made me do it. You know, there's lots of different ways that people play with power. But you cannot make someone do something using hypnosis that they wouldn't normally do. When they're hypnotized, there's a part of their mind, an other than conscious process, that's it's commonly referred to as the hidden observer. It's kind of like a mini version of you that sits in the back of your head. And even in the deepest state of trance, even when you're fully asleep, it's there watching over you, guiding you and helping you.
And we're getting some questions in on the text line. So I think we got to this one already. Does hypnosis take away control from someone? It kind of does, but doesn't.
The short answer to that question is the subject is always in control of the experience. The subject is always the one guiding the rate of change and the level of intensity that they feel. The hypnotist can make suggestions to increase or decrease the level of intensity, but ultimately it's the subject's unconscious that is the limiting or controlling factor in the interaction.
The next question, when you go into trance, are you still coherent? Maybe Elizabeth, you want to answer that one?
Yeah, sure.
I suppose it depends what they mean by coherent. Like, I can still answer all the questions you ask and I remember everything that happens and I'm, you know, consciously aware of everything that's happening while it's happening.
And this question here, is it a long-lasting thing or is there a time limit in how long you are in this trance?
I think the longest I've ever, kind of as an experiment to answer that question for myself, I've kept someone in trance for about 6 continuous hours. And they were fully, you know, lucid during that. They were able to communicate verbally. They were wandering around the house. They were happy and bouncy, but at the same time, incredibly responsive to suggestion. I haven't experimented beyond that, so I honestly couldn't speak on it.
I suppose, yeah, maybe the limit does not exist. Is there a limit? Maybe you fall asleep and then you're back to normal.
Well, that's typically what happens. That's typically the end state of a trance like that, would be you fall asleep and then you wake up and you're back to normal.
Dustin from Launceston's texted in. Is it as simple, about the erotic side of things, is it as simple as me and my girlfriend trying it in the bedroom or do I need professional assistance?
Dustin, it depends on what you'd like to do with it. I would strongly advise you to steer away from any regressions or therapy techniques and stay firmly in the realm of the erotic. Think about more emotions than long-term permanent habit change, and you really can't go wrong. I mean, one of my favorite really simple techniques is to have someone close their eyes and take them back to a moment in their past where they felt a particular emotion really strongly, like happiness or joy. And you have them close their eyes and take themselves back to that moment, and then you just start to have them describe what's going on around them. And you see the smile on their face because they're right back there in that experience. And then you start to feed them details and you change the tense and you do some really awesome technical stuff. But that would be a fantastic place to start. And I don't really think you could go wrong with something like that. It would be very difficult to go wrong with something like think of a time in the past that you were happy and feel happy again.
What are some examples of what you can get your partner to do while hypnotized?
So much.
Oh, do you want to take this one then?
Tell us about it.
Well, yeah, the orgasms on demand is definitely something a lot of people ask a lot of questions about. Are they real? Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, they're very real.
So how does it work? Is it just like it's suggested and then you're like, okay, yeah, no, I am feeling that?
Well, or if I can take this one.
Please do.
So The thing about orgasm is it's not a thing. It's a state.
Right.
So orgasm is like, it's once you understand that it's a state, you can feel happy for more than 1 second at a time, right? You can feel happy for more than 30 seconds at a time. You don't sort of hit a peak happiness and then kind of fade back down to normal. The same with orgasm. Once you tap into someone's unconscious and you've established a strong rapport and you have trust and consent, you can harness that state and continue it essentially indefinitely. So orgasms can last for hours. Orgasms can be had, oh, yeah, just thinking back to some great experiences I had with a girl once. And her first experience of this kind of orgasm was just wandering around my kitchen, just coming over and over and over again while she was fully clothed, just, you know, making herself a Vegemite and cheese sandwich.
Wow. Have you, Elizabeth, have you sort of had orgasms in a weird state like that? Were you sort of like moving around or in trance somewhere you wouldn't expect?
Yeah, I have had like a few in public. Like we've been out and he's like, can I? And I'm like, yes, yes, please do. And yeah, coming incredibly intensely in front of other people, not showing it, but yeah, enjoying it.
Yeah.
Quite a lot.
What Elizabeth, if I may, like, what else do you like done to you while you're in a hypnotic state?
One of my favorite things is living sexual fantasies. A lot of sexual fantasies aren't really realistic to make happen. Like some are just impossible, some are difficult, some are risky.
Some are impractical.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, it's easy to kind of go into a state and kind of, like, vivify an experience and to mentally go through it without actually physically going through some kind of ordeals.
Yeah, so it's, like, a safe way of trying out some things that, you know, I suppose, like bondage or even things that could hurt you or that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Mm. As well as acting out things that are a bit impractical in real life, like, you know, sex in public is a big fantasy, but finding people that are willing to consent to watching you without going to a swingers club can be hard sometimes. So you can simply take someone into trance, have sex with your girlfriend or boyfriend while they're hypnotized with their consent, and suggest to them that there's someone else in the room watching them and let them enjoy that experience of being watched.
Yeah, well, we're almost out of time tonight on The Hookup. But did you have any last piece of advice for anyone who wants to give this a go with their partner?
So I have a website at thewordsmithspeaks.com with links to all my classes. I run them pretty regularly here in Melbourne. I'm very active in the kink scene, and we have a regular practice group for erotic hypnosis, which you can join by applying on my website. I'd also suggest for anyone just starting out, they purchase Mark Wiseman's book, Mind Play. It's basically the textbook for erotic hypnosis.
Great. Daniel, the wordsmith, thank you so much for joining us, and Elizabeth as well on The Hookup.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Have you got a topic you really want covered? Shoot us an email via thehookup@abc.net.au or hit us up on Facebook.